Hey everybody, welcome back to One Club Shorts Podcast. We've got a fun show for you today. It's kind of an in-between week for big golf events. We've got, the Scottish Open coming up. We've just finished the John Deere Classic, but really everyone's prepping, either taking time off or gearing up for the British Open. That's in 2 weeks. There's a lot going on with women's golf, so we're going to hit on a couple of topics there. How is women's golf growing? What do they need to do different to, get the game more exciting for folks? And if anything, let's start that over. I don't want to go down that route necessarily.
Yeah. You want to just talk about that? We were talking before the podcast about Alison Corpuz wins the U.S. Women's.
I'm going to start the intro. I don't know if I want to necessarily call it not interesting.
I wouldn't call it not interesting. Yeah. You can start over.
Hey everybody, welcome back to One Club Shorts Podcast. We are in the thralls of in between weeks of our next big major for the PGA. We got the British Open in 2 weeks. We've got, folks gearing up for the Scottish Open this week. So we'll talk a little bit about, does the Scottish Open really get these guys prepared for the British Open? Does the weather, the fescue, the greens, does that really help you get prepared? Or do these guys just not need it because they're so good? We're going to talk a little bit about the John Deere, and then the LPGA had their Open last weekend. So we'll hit on that as well. Also some big news going on. It's all early stages, but we're going to talk a little bit about LIV and the PGA and the merger, kind of what we know as of this time, different possibilities of where this thing's going to go. And of course we are about to go back to back to back with all our One Club Short events. So, we'll talk a little bit about Belport Golf Club on the, which we're going to hit next Monday, July 17th. So we're super excited about that. But I don't know, Will, where do you want to start?
I mean, I think we got to start with the upcoming slate of One Club Short events. We're playing July 17th, we're playing July 31st, we're playing August 14th, some phenomenal courses in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Craig, if you just want to give the rundown of those, I mean, we could not be more excited. As we've discussed on this podcast a million times, these are hidden gems, phenomenal courses in a part of the country that is chock full of them. Courses you might not know about, courses you probably wouldn't be able to get onto otherwise. So, Craig, I'll just throw it to you for the rundown of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool because every course is a little bit different. I mean, starting out at Belport, we've got it's really, a typical Long Island course where it's on the water, or part of it's on the water. You've got some fescue. You're going to be dealing with the wind. You've got some great greens that were just, some of the course was just redone, and you've got some great greens that are really challenged the golfers. So what it may lack in length, overall length, I think it's only 6,300 yards, it's going to make up for in a bunch of other areas. So it's a kind of event where you can be super aggressive and, try and drive a couple par fours if you're bombing away. But it's also not going to kill you to lay up on some and what have you, because it is very high risk reward. So if you try to swing out of your shoes, you're very easily going to find yourself in some fescue in the water. Wind's going to take things left and right. So it's going to be quite challenging as well. So I don't know. I'm just excited for it because it's different from some of the other courses that we've traditionally done an event at. And I think people are really going to like it. Then we head out to Jersey after that, and Edgewood Country Club is just phenomenal. It's got a good mixture of some narrow holes, some long holes. We've got some water. You've got a little bit of everything. So it's going to be more of your traditional, real hidden gem country club. But man, it is every review you hear about this place is unbelievable. So we're really excited about that one. I think folks are going to love it. And then Rock Rimmon on August 14th in Stamford, Connecticut is just killer. I mean, I've played it a couple times already in my life. I've been lucky enough to be invited to play there. And it is awesome. I think from the food all the way to the golf course itself, people are going to absolutely love it. So we are really pretty much in the heat of our summertime as far as back to back to back. So we're not going to have much time to pivot here. Every 2 weeks, we're going to have a separate event. And they're really filling up fast. So if you haven't had a chance, there's a couple spots left at Belport, not many. And then a few spots at Edgewood and Rock Rim. And, but again, they're now that people are realizing that they're filling up, they're starting to fill up really quick. So if you want to join, please join us at www.oneclubshort.com. Register. We'd love to have you all. Make sure you come say hi at registration. We're always there. And, you know, we picked up some really cool new sponsors, which we'll talk about, you know, probably next week. And just can't wait to meet you all. So come on down.
Awesome. Love it. Couldn't wait. So I want to talk about the Scottish Open, which is an interesting tournament, primarily in that you get a lot of PGA Tour players who almost never play in Europe playing in it. And it's now like a jointly presented event. And it's also interesting in that it feels to me like ever since Phil won the Scottish Open in 2013 and then went on to win the British Open, it has become a really popular thing for people to play in. And I don't know if I'm overstating that, understating that, but I just went back and looked, and I assumed that what I was going to see is all the guys who are winning the British Open in the last 10 or so years are playing in the Scottish Open. That's what I expected to see. But if you look back, Cam Smith played, he finished top 10, goes on to win the Open. Morikawa played in 2021, but he finished 71st. So like, I don't know, how much did it really prepare him? There was obviously no Scottish Open or British Open in 2020. Shane Lowry didn't play, Francesco Molinari didn't play, Jordan Spieth didn't play. So now I'm thinking, oh, this is kind of, maybe there's nothing here, but then you look back, Henrik Stenson top 15, Zach Johnson didn't play, Rory top 15, and Phil won. So Glenn, I think I'll throw this one to you as you know, the guy with some experience playing playing competitive golf. Is there anything here? Is this just a difference in how guys like to prepare? Do you think there's an advantage to be gained from getting a little links experience? Does it matter where in the rotation the Scottish Open is, where in the rota the British Open is? Like, how do we read this? Is it just that Phil won it and then won the British Open and everyone freaked out and now it's nothing? Like, what do we make of this?
You know, I think more of this is just getting on the time zone, right? These guys can hit the shots, any shot under any condition. So nothing's a surprise. Wind isn't a surprise. Bounces aren't a surprise. Rolling the ball against, you know, as opposed to flying isn't a surprise. The Scottish Open is kind of crazy. You know, you think, oh yeah, Scottish Open, it's got to be on a links course. It's going to prepare everybody for the Open Championship. But, you know, in the past, it's spent a lot of years at Loch Lomond, which is not anything that you would think you would see in the Scottish Open. So I think part of it is like a lot of years it was in those sort of parkland golf courses. It didn't prepare them. So it wasn't really a prep course per se. I think now that, you know, the Renaissance Club, I think is a little bit more like a standard British Open course. So sure. I think it's a little bit more of a prep. But yeah, like I said, these guys, you know, there's two things. They can hit any shot anywhere under any conditions. And the, you know, with the Open Championship, it's kind of what makes it kind of fun is there, you know, whoever gets the fewest bad bounces wins. You know, sometimes it feels like that. So I think it's just more getting acclimated to the time, the weather. But I don't think the Scottish Open really prepares them for the Open Championship. I mean, it does this year now because of the course. In the past, not so much. Let's see what happens next week.
Yeah, I think it's weird that these folks who want to take 2 weeks off. I mean, like a lot of them didn't play in the John Deere. Maybe a handful of them did, but in reality, I'd want to get over there, get used to the time, get used to the, you know, the food and everything else. Just kind of, I don't know. I feel like this isn't one that you want to cram in, right? Just show up and hopefully play well. Get there early, might as well play in the Scottish Open, you know, especially this year, because like you said, it's a little bit closer in layout and design. So I think it would benefit them. I just don't think these guys do well with 2 weeks off, more than anything else. So they, like you said, they can hit every shot and they can adapt pretty quick, but I don't know. These are folks that used to, you know, usually go out and hit 1,000 balls after the round just to keep practicing. Just seems like a long time off.
Yeah, and playing in North Berks definitely better than, you know, more prep than Nicholasville, Kentucky, where I think Barbasol is championship is. So You know, that's a tough one to get on. You know, you play in the Barbasol and then you're getting on a plane Sunday night and flying over. You're getting there Monday, you know, mid-morning, you know, mid-afternoon, whatever, and trying to figure out a golf course. I think it's smart. I mean, look, I'm jealous watching, you know, Ricky and JT and Spieth that, you know, Wimbledon and, you know, here we are at pubs having beers. I mean, to me, that's the way you prepare for a major. Get over there, have a couple of beers, get into the mood of the place, and then go play the Open Championship.
Yeah, 100%.
There are some awesome past champions of the Scottish Open. Just if you take a look back, you have 2010 U.S. Open also ran Gregory Havray. You have the lesser Molinari Eduardo. You have Jeev Milka Singh in 2012. I would have told you he was retired by then. Yeah. This is, you can really get down a rabbit hole with some of these European Tour tournaments and their past champions. They get really kind of sicko. It's awesome.
David Faraday.
There you go. Yeah.
Scottish Open champion.
I think one thing that'll be interesting to watch with the Scottish Open is this is only the second year that it's been a joint PGA Tour, European Tour event. So, you know, Xander Schauffele won it last year. The field this year looks really, really good. Like, Data Golf says that its field is in between the PGA Championship and the US Open in strength, which, you know, makes sense given, you know, how you can qualify for those tournaments. But like, it feels like pretty much every big name is over there. You look at the guys who are getting good odds. It's Scheffler, McIlroy, Cantlay, Xander, Ricky, Hovland, Fleetwood, Spieth. Like, everyone who's anyone is playing in this tournament. And whether it's getting used to the time zone or getting used to the grass or whatever it might be, like, people are certainly taking this seriously, and I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how much this works as a strategic play and how much it's just the PGA Tour kind of reaching its handle over into Europe.
This is my favorite part of the season. I call it coffee golf. Like,
yeah.
I just, 5 o'clock in the morning, grab a cup of coffee, and I'm watching really, really good golf. I love this. I love this stretch with the Senior Open Championship. Okay. The Women's Open Championship, the Scottish Open, the Irish Open. I mean, I just love it all. So I get excited this time of year.
That makes one of us who's getting up at 5 a.m. But I also like the quality of golf that's being played when I get up.
I'm going to call BS Glenn getting up at 5 a.m. more than anything else. I like it. I like the idea in theory.
Yeah. I have insomnia. I don't sleep anymore. So this is good for me.
So is it getting up at 5 a.m. or that you just are up at 5 a.m.?
No, that, being up at 5 a.m. sucks, but it gives me something to do other than watching the news.
Yeah, as long as the golf is good, right? So, Glenn, you mentioned the Women's British Open. I think there's an interesting conversation to be had. There are a few interesting conversations to be had about the U.S. Women's Open, which just happened at Pebble Beach. First of all, really cool that they up the prize money for the tournament. The USGA is really getting behind it. They're bringing it to just as good of venues as the men play at. I think that's really exciting. There are definitely still strides to be made when you think about the TV product and the broadcast slots and, you know, which networks it's on versus not on, but good progress there. One trend that's concerning to me that's going on in women's golf and has been for the last 4 or 5 years is they haven't had a repeat major champion in forever. They've had a string of over 20 unique major champions. For many of those players, it's been her first major. For some of them, it's been her first LPGA Tour win, as it was for Alison Corpuz, who won at Pebble Beach. And like everyone who wins those majors on that tour seems to be an absolute killer, but that has not helped us predict anything in the last few years. I'm going to take the position that there's too much parity in women's golf. We need like a women's Tiger Woods, because it's great if you're on the LPGA Tour that you have just as good a shot as anyone to be the next major champion. And that's what we've seen for years and years now. But when they are marketing their sport, and maybe they want to get behind Lydia Ko, or maybe they want to get behind Rose Zhang, or maybe they want to get behind one of the Cordas, or maybe they want to get behind, Allison Corpuz, or, you know, whoever the next first time major winner is, they're not seeing sustained success from the people who are winning their biggest tournaments. And if you compare that to, you know, the PGA Tour having its Jon Rahms and its Brooks Koepkas, I think it's understandable that people may find it harder to follow. So my question, I'll start with you, Craig, is what can the LPGA Tour do to make sure its next major champion is someone who is not winning her first major?
Yeah, I mean, it's like an age-old question, and we were kind of talking about this a little bit before the podcast started. It's, you know, parity is great for any sport sometimes, but it also makes it really hard for the sports marketing group to, you know, gear up advertising and fan base, whatever. Like when Tiger came in and went on that run, I've never seen anything like that before, and they probably will never see anything like that again. He was obviously super special. But you saw that same effect with Jordan and the Bulls. You saw that same effect, you know, and then when Jordan left, who takes over those reins? All right, locally, Kobe and Shaq were there, and then LeBron came up. There's always been somebody, women's soccer, same thing. As soon as somebody big leaves, someone else is able to take those reins. The LPGA hasn't found that person yet. They've got a lot of really, really good golfers, but it's really a crapshoot every week who wins. And I just think, you know, marketing wise, it gets really hard. And I think the PGA suffered from that too, on the men's side, where when they didn't have anybody really consistently dominating the field week in, week out, at least being competitive, I think their numbers suffer as well. It's almost like, you know, it's kind of like, oh, I'll watch the end of a Sunday match then just to kind of see what happens. But nobody watches Thursday, Friday, Saturday, only because it's a lot of mush, right? So it's sad to say, but I think it makes it really hard. So I don't know what they do. I mean, it's just really potluck. But I think more than anything else, the LPGA needs one you know, female golfer to kind of stand up and really start to dominate that field, for the numbers to get better, the sponsorship to get better, to get a bigger audience. I just, you know, it's just not easy. It's just timing.
So hand up, Jin Young Ko actually won back-to-back tournaments in 29, back-to-back majors in 2019, but it's been a streak of 20 different champions each time since then, with the exception of, I just had it. Minji Lee has two in there, but they were like 10 majors apart. So there's just no consistency in who's winning the tournaments. And I think, Craig, you hit it with Jordan and the Bulls, or with Tiger and the men's game, or, you know, whatever it might be. Having a distinct leader, a distinct number one, and a race to dethrone that person is really compelling. There's a reason we pay attention to dynasties. One, dynasties are entertaining. Two, it's interesting to see who's going to topple them. And it's been a very long time in the women's game since there's been that. You know, there was Annika for a while, and there was Yanni Tseng and Lorena Ochoa each for a little bit. But then, I don't know, the only person with three majors since then, I think, is NB Park, and she hasn't won in forever. I'm not even sure she's still playing super competitive professional golf. So like, that's the state of the game. And I think that's tough for them, but clearly there's just so much parity. Like, I don't know how you can't demand that someone separate herself. Like, you can't make it happen artificially.
Especially in golf. I mean, it's an individual sport. It's just so hard to, you know, it, you just got to kind of figure out when that lightning strikes to everyone's got to get behind it. But, you know, you would think in theory, oh, that's great. That means everyone, and it's really I think the athletes within the women's game have come such a long way. It's great to watch. Like the game itself has grown, and these women are absolutely killing it. That's awesome. But I think it makes it hard for a marketing team to figure out what's what to, you know, to draw on that audience. And that's for any sport. It's really not anything with the women. It's just any sport that doesn't have that leader, like you said, to either watch them win or watch them crash. That's kind of what the, you know, the dynasty effect actually has.
Yeah, and you also need that person that you need someone that, you know, of course it's going to be organic, but you also need them to have a big personality. You need them to transcend the sport like Tiger did, like MJ did, like Tom Brady did. They brought non-fans of their sport to watch their games because they're just the best, you know. And, you know, I'll watch Federer play tennis, and that's the only tennis I ever watch is, you know, if he's in contention at a major. Unfortunately, that, you know, I think that's, the LPGA, of course, hasn't had that in such a long time. I think that's why so many people have latched onto Rose Zhang to the point where I almost feel sorry for her now, that the entire golf world is like, this is the biggest thing in the history of women in the LPGA. It's like,
she turned pro a month ago.
Let's give this girl a moment to breathe, get her feet. She just turned pro. Hopefully she turns into that star. She seemed like a really nice person. She's a great golfer, obviously. But you can't just wish it on. I think the world and her parents destroyed Michelle Wee. She was going to be
probably
the most dominant woman player in a long time, if not ever. I just think that chase, whether it was her or her parents pushing her to compete against the men, you're going to win the Masters, you're going to play the U.S. Amateur, you're playing the U.S. Men's Publinks. I think that quest to keep up with the men and the distance is what kept her injured throughout her career, because she kept looking for those extra yards to compete against the men. I think if we had just let that girl go, and because she is a huge personality now, she's fun on social media. She's great for girls and guys. You know, we like to watch her play. Like I said, she's fun socially. If we had let that happen 10, 15 years ago, they might have had their star, but they just don't have it yet. I mean, every sport's looking for the Tiger Woods, but it has to be organic. And I don't, you know, maybe it's Rose Zhang, but I just don't, you know, who knows right now?
Yeah, and how
it's so much pressure too. In these individual sports, it's so much pressure to be standing on an island and saying you're the next big thing. If it doesn't happen organically where you win a couple and then all of a sudden you get it, all these that I was talking about this with someone the other day, golf, tennis, you know, maybe a handful of other sports, when, you know, maybe being a pitcher, when you're on an island like that and, you know, you've got no one else to turn to and, you know, things start to go south, it becomes such a mental block. And it doesn't take much to, you know, really start to take over your life and your game and kind of ruin everything that you built for so long that you love. You got to be careful with that, right? Throwing anybody into that elite status before they're ready is just, it does more harm than good, probably 99% of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And man, how unfortunate, like, we've been aware of Michelle Wee for, like, you know, almost 25 years now. She's 33 years old and is retiring from the game of golf. And, you know, congratulations to her on what for anyone else would be a really good career. You know, she's a five-time winner. She won a major, but between the weight of the expectations, obviously the injuries, Glenn, as you said, there's just some stuff that it's hard to overcome. But look, I hope women's golf can find its, you know, big personality who is gonna, you know, be the public leader of that sport. Because look, I mean, you watch these tournaments, especially now as the USGA at least is bringing its championship to courses we're accustomed to seeing and not just playing it at, like, you know, Pine Needles every year, which seems like it was the strategy for a little while. Like, the quality of golf is absolutely there. There's no question about that. That's something we've discussed for a long time on this podcast. But man, like, I hope something happens that makes it the spectator sport that it probably could and ought to be. Politics and the U.S. Senate became a spectator sport today, though. And that does not always happen when we're talking about the game of golf. But the Senate, what is it, Subcommittee on Investigations or Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations? I would not want you to think I was talking about the Temporary Subcommittee on Investigations.
Subcommittee on things they shouldn't be wasting their time on.
Exactly. This is like when Congress was talking about, like, the BCS, because like Utah was mad it wasn't picking them or whatever. So you had Connecticut's Dick Blumenthal and Wisconsin's Ron Johnson talking about like the proposed tour live merger, and that meant that people got their hands on a lot of documents that exist around potential proposed frameworks of how the two organizations are going to work together and what this investment is going to look like and what the operating model will be moving forward. And there's like 300 pages of stuff or something. My biggest takeaway, which one of my friends, and he'll know when he hears this who he is, was suggesting a couple weeks ago, is like, so much of this is just that this guy Yasser really likes golf, which is, when you think about the sports washing conversation and the 9/11 families and the Jimmy Dunn stuff and all of that, like, so much of this is there's just a guy who is managing a lot of money who really wants to be a member at Augusta. And to me, that's a little bit hilarious.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
Sorry, yeah, I was gonna say, I think the whole thing is just such a waste of time, you know, for without all the craziness that's going on in the country right now, for to have any of these politicians focus on this for more than 2 seconds is silly. But I get it. It's got to be done as far as, you know, making sure there's no collusion. I love some of the stories that are coming out from what's going to happen from potentially Rory and Tiger getting a team on LIV and having a, you know, playing some LIV events, or LIV going away altogether, or what's going to happen to Greg Norman. It's tough to get too upset about any of it because it's all such, you know, BS and speculation. But I do love the fact that, you know, I don't know anything about this guy. I don't know anything about the money or where it came from. So I'm not trying to say what's right or what's wrong, but I do love the fact that this guy just loves golf and wants to be part of it so bad that he will take every penny that he has or he can get his hands on and put it into a sport so he can become, you know, one of the folks at the table. So that I admire, you know, more than anything else. But I do think that we took away from all of this stuff that, man, the PGA was just getting out-muscled money-wise. At some point, you know, whatever money they had in the bank was going to quickly run out compared to what, you know, the Saudis had. So it was almost like, we're going to do this deal, not out of desperation, but just to make it all stop. You know, before it gets worse, let's just make it all stop. So I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it all comes out. It's hard to get too happy, too mad, too, you know, whatever, too emotional with any of it until we see what really is true. But
I like the I think my favorite thing that came out was one of the documents was Jay Monahan's list of people to call before the announcement, and it was Rory and Tiger, Rolex, FedEx, RBC, golf orgs, and broadcast partners. Yeah, you know what, Jay Monahan, I think that would cover your bases. Good job. Yeah. I think there's an open question of whether he got to them, because I don't know that it was after 9 a.m. that the news broke, but I think that shows good preparation from our guy Jay Monahan.
Glenn's name was highly redacted from that document.
Exactly. It was actually above Rory and
between,
Tiger.
Yeah, between Rory and Tiger, there was a G money. That's
I just thought it was hilarious that you know, Dick Blumenthal up there going, you know, I just hope that, you know, you guys aren't selling this great American institution to the Saudis for profit. It's like, is there an institution that is more sold out to foreign interests than the U.S. Congress? I mean, give me a break. It's purely performative. They're up there. The only thing that came out of it is that we learned that Greg Norman is probably out. That's it. That's the only news. That's the only thing that they all gave their speeches. Some of them hit China, some of them hit the Saudis. They got up there, they got on their pedestals, all of them on both sides of the aisle, you know, gave their performance. And then the only thing that came out of it is Greg Norman's out as CEO once this deal goes through.
Which sounds like, if we can take anything away from the broader discourse that there's been about this, it sounds like that won't make a lot of non-Greg Norman people unhappy.
Poor Greg. I like Greg.
Yeah, I mean, look,
he was a great player, charismatic, brought over the game, then he gets involved in this and, you know, everyone's giving him a hard time, but they give, you know, everyone who's involved in this a hard time.
I think to me, you gotta, like, if you're in Greg Norman's position, I'm going to give some advice to Greg Norman right here, which I'm obviously very qualified to do. We know he's a listener. When he sent that letter, that like open letter, when the PGA Tour said it wasn't going to let live guys play on the PGA Tour, and like the first line of it was, "Surely you jest."
Yeah.
Like, nobody talks like that.
Talks like that.
Least of all, Greg Norman. Like that, I think that is one of the greatest things to come out of all of this. Yeah.
It's supposed to be like, before I put another shrimp on the Bobby.
Exactly. Yeah.
If it is true, do you think they let Rory write the letter to Greg, dismissing him?
I think anything else would be wrong.
A handwritten letter from Rory. Dearest Greg.
Dearest Gregory.
Yeah, I think the Saudis, right? They just want to sit at the table. They just want to be there. It sounds like they don't want any controlling interest. They don't want to do the day-to-day. They just want to, here's our money, and we're going to pull some strings from behind. And which puppets, we don't know who they are yet, and what they're going to accomplish, we don't know yet. So it's going to be interesting to see. But you put up that much money for a seat at the table, you're not just going to sit back and listen. I think you're going to try to make some changes, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next few months when the details of this thing come out. None of them came out today in the hearing.
Yeah, it's amazing. We have just as many questions now as we did on June 6th, it feels like. And it's the same talking points, which, like, congratulations for your consistency. But the guy Price, the COO of the PGA Tour, whose first name I'm forgetting, Ron Price, when he was saying, Liv was an existential threat, the PGA Tour has been under threat, we're protecting this American institution, like, by taking $1 billion of the people who
you're selling it,
threatening the, like, I can't follow this stuff. You can't take any of it seriously.
I was surprised couldn't remember if the PGA Tour China is still happening. He's like, that was cool. Like, wait, you're pretty high up on the PGA Tour. What's going on? Tour.
Do we go there? We'll get back to you on that.
I gotta check my sports fans.
That was really good. Also, Jimmy Dunn, and look, Jimmy Dunn's a Notre Dame guy. I'm a Notre Dame guy. I don't want to be too critical of him, but if I were Jimmy Dunn, I might stop saying every time I'm asked that if I find out someone that's associated with this in some way was also associated with 9/11 in some way, I would kill them myself. I might just not be making that promise, because he said it more than once now. And look, you know, merits of that aside, I just don't know that we should be like out here like promising to kill people. Just like,
I think the whole notion of tying any of this stuff together with, it's like, I don't know. It's such a sensitive subject, and it's such a no-win situation for everybody.
And the PGA Tour has made a huge mess of it repeatedly. And I think he's kind of trying to react against that, but he's doing it in like a really not good way. And it's like, guys, this talking point should have been dead a while ago.
Yeah.
I like Dirty Harry, Jimmy Dunn, personally. I like that. I mean, this guy, when they announced that he was on the PGA policy board, this guy, you know, for whatever you want to say about it, this guy loves golf. And I think he was brought in literally to save the game, to say, guys, you know, he knows all these guys and member at Seminole and all these other courses. Gust, I mean, he knows all the players. Like, guys, we're about ready to run this sport into the ground, and the PGA Tour is about to, you know, go bankrupt. We got to get together. And like we all said for the past year, get in a room at Augusta, figure it out. And I think that's exactly what they did. And I think Jimmy Dunn is the reason. He's sort of like the, I don't want to sound wishy-washy, but sort of like the golf guardian angel, I think, at this point. I think he spearheaded all of this to get the game back on track. And I think he's done a good job.
Yeah, no, he's very much the keeper of the keys in American golf, you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and give him a ton of credit, because I think if he didn't step up and take the reins, I think golf would be in a really crummy spot within a year. I mean, to the point where, Now at least they've made a deal somewhat on their terms, you know, at least, you know, they've got a say in it. If this went on for another year, they would be told what would happen, because they're up against it. So it's, you know, he, he stepped in at the right time and he, you know, made the deal he thought that needed to get done, regardless if you like it or not. I think he pretty much, you can say he was one of the factors that saved the PGA for, you know, at least still being in existence. So
absolutely.
Definitely. Craig, do you want to take a moment to wax poetic about Ricky Fowler once again winning a PGA Tour event up in Detroit?
Yeah, I mean, look, just the week before that, we were talking about, like, I was saying, man, I had to turn it off because he had it and then he lost it, and I just couldn't watch him lose again. Watching him win was one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time for golf, just because there's been great winners. There's been great, you know, some awesome competition. But seeing somebody who has totally lost their swing more times than not, especially if it's been more than a year, you see them slowly fade away and just maybe only playing some big events when they still have their, the fact that they've gotten an invite. But Ricky stuck with it, you know, whatever he did, changed his swing coach, fought back as much as he did, took all the heat when everyone was like, he's, you know, he's doing too many commercials, too many sponsorship, he doesn't care enough about the game, put all that out of his head and fought back. And now he's, you know, he's in my mind, sure, you know, shooing for the Ryder Cup team. I think he's going to continue to play well. I think he's just in that groove, and it's just awesome to watch because it's such an easy sport to lose it all really quickly. It's a great story. And he's such a good dude. I mean, it's just, I've never heard anybody say they don't like Ricky Fowler. Not a one person. So.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's like, you know, people say like, you know, he's kind of soft and he fades on Sunday, but if you can come back from where his game was to winning, that's not a soft person. And I think it probably solidifies Butch Harmon as the greatest golf instructor of all time. I mean, this kid was with him playing great, you know, goes away from, like so many players do, lose their way, and then you come back to Butch and you're a winner a year later. Pretty awesome.
And just like that, you know, he's still a little bit down in the Ryder Cup standings, but I agree, making himself kind of an undeniable captain's pick. Mm-hmm. And look who he's right by in the OWGR standings. Mm-hmm. Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Tommy Fleetwood. I think we think those are pretty good players. And Data Golf, which has a little bit more of a recency bias, likes him even more. It has him as the sixth best player on the planet. So
because if you look at it, right, they're all going down, he's going up. So it's like they're passing elevators in the night, and it's just, which I don't know is a real saying or not, but
did you say elevators in the night?
Yeah, elevators in the night, right? You know, you can say ship, but ships don't go up and down. So I just kind of revamped it. You get what I'm saying, right?
Elevators in the night?
Yeah, like when the mall's closed. I don't know. But you get what I'm saying. Some are going up, some are going down.
We got a new one.
Sometimes we record this podcast and I'm like, man, what clip am I going to put on Instagram when we put this one out there? And now I'm already imagining, like, holding my phone and seeing Craig go, oh yeah, it's like elevators in the night.
Ships in the night didn't make sense for this one. Sorry, I'm kind of a math guy.
That's Barry Manilow's song, Elevators in the Night.
We always find a way to take this like so far off the rails, and here I was thinking it was going to be like the death threats thing, but it's absolutely quickly become elevators in the night. Make it. You're the merch guy. I mean, you're the everything guy, but yeah, basically nobody playing better than Ricky Fowler right now. He's trending up. A lot of people aren't. It'll be interesting to see if any of us have the guts to pick him to win the British Open when we make those picks next week. Glenn, before we wrap things up here, you know, I care about you deeply. And I want to check in on your golf game.
Well, I actually got to play twice last week, which is the first time this year.
Wow.
Yeah. So Craig and I played an outing up at Unionvale. My team won. Bam.
There you go.
I think we won, right? I can't remember. I was
slow. Yes, you did win.
It was a fun
and
outing.
They got to pay the dinner bill with the winnings.
Yeah, we took the winnings and threw it down on the bar for Jax. She's a good bartender / up there at the links at Unionvale. If you're ever up there, play that golf course. It's awesome, and say hello to Jax. She's a great bartender. A lot of fun. And then I played, I shot 77 at a place called, I'd never played before. It's a public course in New Jersey, Charleston Springs. They have the North course is a Lynx type course. And it was, I can't believe I'd never heard of this place. It's a Monmouth County Parks, which is the great, they have Comedy Hill, Howell Park. And this place I'd never been. And I played with my cousins. They made the tee time and, went over, played that Lynx course. That I can't wait to play that again. That's they said hidden gem, that place. So if you're in central New Jersey, down the shore or close to the shore, Charleston Springs, play the North course.
Notably not the shore.
There's Glennie down the shore.
Down the shore. Fist pumping.
Whoop, whoop.
Karma's closed. Karma's closed. Went down seaside. Karma's closed.
Glenn, the situation. Oh, Craig, were you looking for this?
Much better than mine.
Is your game in good shape?
Yeah, it's been hit or miss. I came in second place at Unionville. Our team.
You know who won?
First loser.
Yeah, behind Glenn. It was a tough day. But yeah, that was a blast. I think we had five teams go up to Unionville. Hopped in a bus. That was probably 95 degrees without air conditioning on the way up. So it was like a sauna. Had a fun little shamble match with all the guys. Great day. Second place didn't cut it. But I didn't have to pay the dinner bill, so it was kind of a win-win. I did have to pay for Dave Ward's team because he couldn't find his wallet. But we'll talk about that another day. Then I got to play Westchester Country Club for the first time. Last Thursday, which was awesome.
That is some golf course.
It is spectacular. I've driven past it about a million times in my life. Just I've never played. So that was a lot of fun. But I'm doing all right. I'm holding my own.
Good.
But I played with my cousins on Sunday, and they're all much better at golf than I am. They made me play from the back tees at Wingfoot. It is a whole nother game. I mean, like, I'd hit a drive where, I'm hitting for my normal tees, I'd think it would be great. And, I'm then stuck in a bunker that I never really had to deal with before. I just, it is, length is such a advantage for golfers. If you can hit it long and straight, man, it just, everything is, become so much easier. And these guys absolutely destroyed me. It was fun to watch them, but I'm getting too old for that.
You know how, like you go to a rock concert and people say, if it's too loud, you're too old.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that.
Oh, it's 100% like that. That was my debate from the first team. I was like, what are we doing? I'm getting older. I should be moving up, not back. But
Craig Schneider, proponent of the tee it forward movement.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep it moving. That's what it's called. Keep moving up. Yeah. That what the Jefferson said, moving on up. That's me.
That's
it was Jefferson's.
You see, when someone like when the conversation's about how you're getting older and then you reference the Jeffersons, you don't do yourself many favors.
I'm not denying I'm old. You just found out what ET was like a week ago. So don't
I knew about ET. It was the Vampire Diaries, or no, what was the thing that was on the CW that I was joking about? Oh, Teen Wolf. I found out that was a movie and not just a show on the CW that competes with Live Golf. Although I will say, I was in New York on, oh gosh, what would it have been? Like the first Sunday in July when the Live event was in England. And I was looking for the Yankee game in my hotel. And it wasn't on, which was ridiculous. I won't call out the hotel specifically because it was a perfectly fine hotel, but it didn't have the Yankee game. But what it did have was the CW. So I watched like 5 minutes of a Live event, and the broadcast was as awful and gimmicky and ridiculous as I always remembered it. And the format sucks, and the logos are stupid, and they play courses that I don't care about, and bad teams somehow always win, and it's terrible. And the one thing the PGA Tour should ensure in this merger is that everything that makes Live Live, except maybe the team stuff, maybe goes away, because holy cow, you could not get golfers of that caliber together and have a less entertaining product if it was your goal.
Hey, but, how about, speaking of which, speaking of Teen Wolf, how about Koepka throwing Wolf under the bus? Saying basically, you know, hey, you shouldn't be on the team or whatever he said, you know, like he's quitting on the team. He's not putting his heart and soul into it. Now you talk about just being out there in the open. That was a pretty interesting set of quotes from Brooks.
Yeah, you look, I've been pretty public on this podcast that I don't perceive Brooks Koepka as being like the best dude. There are some times when I've given him credit because it seems like maybe he's changed, but there are times where I said he kind of comes off as, you know, a little bit unsavory. And I think him saying that Matt Wolf is a wasted talent and that he's given up, that's kind of like, how do you, to the extent that we're buying into these things as teams, for the team captain to say, I see this guy as a wasted talent and I've given up on him, is, and not to tell it to his face, but to just say it to the media and let it get back to him, that is not the way a team captain should be operating. Like, I think we can all agree on that.
And even if it's true, because like, or even if things are going on behind the scenes, which I'm sure they are, those guys have a lot more insight than we ever will of what really happens day to day. But for a guy who is coming off his own struggles, well-documented struggles, even in the Netflix series where he couldn't get out of his own head, for him to then now all of a sudden that he's playing well again to start throwing people under the bus, like, man, this game ain't easy. Don't, you know, you don't boast too much, because as soon as you're up, you can get down just as fast. It seemed like kind of a crappy thing to do, especially for someone that's supposed to be on your team.
Also, like, I've done this before and I'll do it again. You cannot be the guy who is nepotisming your brother onto this team and then call out the guy who earned his way into, you know, high level professional golf. That's not a cool thing. Yeah. Like if you're Brooks Koepka and you're gonna do this stuff, I feel like you ought to be real careful about who you're calling out. When part of the reason that you're playing on this tour is so you could line your brother's pockets. Like that's a questionable way to operate. It's not the way a leader of a team should be operating. And it makes me sad, because when Brooks, you know, won, whenever it was, a few weeks ago, a month ago, a little more than a month ago, it really seemed like he had abandoned like the, oh, actually I don't try and golf is easy and all of that. And it felt like that was the culmination of what we saw in the Netflix special. And then he comes out and does this, like, sorry, Matt Wolf has 33 times the live points, whatever those are, of your brother this year, Brooks Koepka. So like, who's really the anchor dragging this team down? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, just when you start to like Brooks, he does something stupid. You know, he's got some issues with mental health. It's pretty well documented. Leave the guy alone. He's trying.
I mean, yeah. Glenn has said those same things to me, and it's hurtful. I mean, it's not an easy way to bounce back.
So I say it to your face.
That's true, because I don't have Twitter. But other than that.
You've given up. I've given up on you.
Yeah.
Schneider,
can we tee off one first before you say?
That's at the driving range. I'm like, you're not trying.
Oh my gosh. All right, let's wrap things up here. Craig, give us just the quick rundown one more time for anyone who wants to join any of these upcoming One Club Short events. What should they be looking for? Where should they go?
Yeah, I mean, go to www.oneclubshort.com. Easiest way to do it. If you go to our Instagram account as well, we've got some discount codes on there for some folks, just to give you a taste of what it's like, you know. If we can take a little bit of money off of it and get you out there, I guarantee you'll have a great time and you'll be back for more. So we've thrown those discount codes out there. So look on our Instagram account, you'll see what those codes are. But, you know, right off the bat, we've got next Monday, July 17th at Belport Golf Club in Long Island. We're then going to July 31st. We got Edgewood Country Club in New Jersey, and then Rock Rim on August 14th in Stamford, Connecticut. After that, we go to Maryland, September 11th for Woodholm Country Club, which is going to be awesome. It's our dipping our toes in the water of Maryland first. So it's a first time for us. So that'll be exciting as we start to expand our footprint. Then come right back to New Jersey for Morris County Country Club. That is on October 3rd, which is a Tuesday. So some really great stuff. It is going to come fast and furious. So make sure you sign up soon. And again, make sure you stop by and say hi. We'll all be at registration and love to see you there.
Love it. Glenn, any parting shots from you before we wrap up here?
You're on mute.
3 years of this Zoom stuff, Glenn.
I've given up on Craig. That's all I can say. He's got a try. He's got a partner.
All right. So as we wrap things up here, people can obviously keep up with dates, courses, registration, sign up, all that, membership at oneclubshort.com. You can follow us on Instagram. We're at oneclubshort. And on Twitter, we're at oneclubshort. And then the number one. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts with video if you're on Spotify. And the videos also go up on our YouTube channel, which is One Club Short Pod. We'll be back same time, same place, just about next week to recap the Scottish Open, preview the British Open, and talk about whatever other findings come out from this Senate investigation, I guess. And until then, thanks everyone for listening.
Peace.